jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Oh, man. Dave Peach lives on. He's with his golden retrievers now, not in the commission. But anyway, welcome to The Wrap. It's that time of the week when we kind of talk about the week's news with a couple of friends here in studio. Like we're having coffee or beer, neither of which is happening. Well, I guess you've got coffee, I've got coffee, so I guess we're doing coffee. Rusty Branch, who is the Vice President of Human Resources and Community Engagement for Innisfree Hotels and also works very closely with Parent University. Rusty, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. And a former neighbor of mine. Almost neighbor.
We're close.
Down the street, yeah. Sort of thing. And Dana Elder, who is, of course, the owner of Mathnasium here and also has a branch in Destin.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Spends a lot of time going back and forth. And she's a super math nerd. She's actually wearing a T-shirt right now that has an X and a dividing line and then a zero with a band circle, you know, like the red outline with the slash through it. It says, friends don't let friends divide by zero.
It's good. Absolutely
it's
the case.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a great slogan to live by.
I would say maybe that friends wouldn't be friends with people who divide by zero, because if they did, you probably wouldn't be friends with them.
They would definitely not be my friends.
That's right. Hey, since we're sort of on the subject of math, by my choice, last night Channel 3 ran a story that you were kind of mentioned in anyway, talking about Beulah Middle School. And they're so short, my understanding of the story, you correct me if I'm wrong, they're so short on math teachers and subs even that they're doing their teaching online. Is that right?
That's, if you watch the story, you know as much as I do about what's going on. My understanding is that they have a couple of classes that are being handled exclusively by online instruction. And I mean, you got to get it somewhere. And I know the teacher shortage has been such a struggle for everybody across the country. But I have to wonder how this best serves our students.
Yeah.
Because math, unlike almost any other subject in school, if you read the pieces and you understand what's being talked about, you're going to do well on the test. With math, you can get to something that doesn't make sense. And who do you ask?
Yeah.
How do we solve this?
You can't just keep watching the movie and get it.
Right. You can watch the same video 27 times. It's still not going to click.
And you guys are very hands-on with what you do at Mathnasium. I know you and I have talked many times about this, but the challenge of finding capable math teachers is particularly acute in our area. It is really, like, it would be stunning for people to know the things that you've told me about.
Some things I should probably not repeat.
I understand. But suffice it to say that finding genuinely, because just having an adult teach the class, especially if they're not certified in that subject matter, and we have been scrambling all different kinds of ways to find teachers in Florida, math is just, there are so many adults who can't math.
100%.
And then on top of that, even if they could math themselves, don't know how to teach math to others.
Yeah.
And you got to have both.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. And almost more importantly, it's not that we don't have some great mathematicians that come out of UWF.
Right.
The real problem is that we hand kids calculators in sixth grade and they think they no longer need their multiplication facts. That's awful. That's an awful concept.
Anyway, we could go on, and we do. Rusty, one of the subjects I know we wanted to talk about today was Warrington Middle School, which, I mean, I haven't been watching the meeting. It's happening right now that they could have made a decision already. I'm with the State Department of Education. I'm beside myself with frustration with our school board and our superintendent for just do it. It's abysmal what's been happening for 11 and 12 years now with these kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I think this tells us, or at least shows me, that the school board matters, right? Especially with an appointed superintendent. And I think for a long time in Escambia County, we focused on an elected superintendent, making sure we had the right person or trying to find the right person. And we've sort of let the school board be positions that, maybe we didn't think that much about. And I'm not saying there's good or bad people on the school board, but this shows us how important the school board is now. And going forward, this community needs to realize that when we go to the booth and vote, right? Who are the candidates that we're putting up? Who are we encouraging to run for those positions? because they have a whole lot of power, and they're playing, in my opinion, very fast and very loose with these students and other schools that will be impacted, you know, if a bad decision is made here.
And look, to be fair, I think it would be a mistake to say this is Tim Smith's fault, okay? I mean, this long predates him. I mean, Warrington was a failing or DRF school for – you know, just I think about the entirety of Malcolm Thomas's tenure. Okay, yeah, so
this is I think their 12th year of being either a D or an F school, with the exception of the COVID year, which was knocked out.
Right, and they said they would have been a D school, I think, during that year.
I thought I read that it was a C.
I remember from the school board meeting, the Florida meeting, that they said it would have been had they gone that way. But yeah, it's a long problem, but it does kind of raise this question of, when we try to hire school board members, are we hiring politicians whose political views we like, or are we hiring people who understand education? Because, you know, though we can certainly have good fights about which book ought to be in the library, the core mission of a school board member is to get the right teachers and the right school administrators to make sure that these schools are serving our kids effectively. That's the mission, right?
Yeah, it certainly should be.
we'd hope, you know, but I know it's easy to look at the other stuff and think about the things that we agree with them philosophically or politically about, but that's not the real issue. And I know you deal with this a lot with Parent University, just kind of, you know, doing what you can to help, which I think is a fabulous program. We've talked about it before on the show, but your thoughts about, and look, I also know that when it comes to Warrington, it's not just a matter of saying, well, the school board's not doing their job. They're not, but there's been a lot of things tried there, sure. And it is an incredibly complicated problem. It's not, there is no easy solution. Yeah. There's a lot of factors at play, but you see this stuff up close, right, Rusty?
Yeah, well, you have a community that's largely been forgotten, right? And so we go into places like Inslee and Lincoln Park and Montclair. You know, we can talk about Palafox Street and, you know, the what's happened in Pensacola and the rebirth. But we've forgotten parts of our community. And I've said this on the show before. You know, if all of us aren't doing okay,
right,
then it isn't the best thing to celebrate the few who are doing great. And we've forgotten and left behind some parts of our community. Warrington is certainly one of those. So, yeah, this isn't just a school board or a superintendent. This is really a community issue. But I will say this about the school board. You know, like it or not, we're beholden to the state and the federal dollars.
That's right.
Right? And so I probably wouldn't go upsetting the people that control those state dollars too much. And I know we want home rule. I know we want to make our own decisions. But the fact of the matter is that the majority of our funds come from outside of this community to support the school system. So, you know, to me, that's another part of this that just isn't politically smart. And I hope those school board members will wake up and realize that that's not the folks we want to be fighting with right now.
Yeah, the level we talked about this a couple of days ago on the show. Maybe it was Tuesday, I think. Maybe it was Monday, I forget. But, you know, I was stunned at the tone in the State Department of Education meeting, because I've just never heard state officials. I mean, there was no profanity used, but they were at that level, you know, of frustration with the school board and the superintendent over the inability to get something done with Warrington, and, you know, to come to them with all of these ticky-tack kind of objections. Yeah. And there was one board of education member who basically said, so I know you feel like you're supposed to be, you know, good to the parents of these kids and they're your political constituents. Can you honestly say that what you're doing now is any better? I mean, what could be done that's any worse?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they, that Tim Smith and Fesco did a very good job of speaking to what some of their real frustrations were either. Mm-hmm. It was kind of frustrating for me because they raised some very good points, I thought, and then when they were sort of cut down by the folks at DOE.
Manny Diaz, for example, right?
Yeah, they didn't end up coming back with good answers, and right. Surely they had them, but I mean, you know, once you start getting
defensive and flustered, yeah.
It's hard to get back on point.
You know the thing I hear a lot about Warrington Middle is people will say, and I just got a text from a friend who said the same thing, you know, parental involvement. You see this at Mathnasium, you know, like the parents are the ones who bring the kids in, but what you'd love to be able to do is reach the kids whose parents don't even bring them in.
Yeah.
And how to bridge that gap is a challenge. Okay, so that's just a fact. Are we just going to say, well, therefore these kids just, you know, so be it? I mean, Rusty, like, you're just going to say, well, you know, it's just a problem. These kids, you know, they're going to suffer for the rest of their lives because they don't get an education because their parents are not adequately involved. Okay, there it is. That's just the reality we're going to live with. That's not acceptable because it's certainly not their fault, the kids' fault, right?
Oh, absolutely not. And look, it's easy to blame parents, right?
Right.
And when the school system has parents who want to get super involved, they say, "Whoa, wait a minute. You know, don't be too involved." Right. So it's an easy and convenient excuse in Escambia County to say why we fail. Parents that we run into at Parent University love their kids. They want their kids to succeed. Mm-hmm. They might not have the resources, the knowledge of where those resources are. They don't know how to advocate for their kids like we do. They don't know how to get their kids to mathnasium. They don't have the ability to get their kids necessarily to these sorts of things. So, but we found it Saturday after Saturday for the last 2.5 years. These parents absolutely care. They absolutely want the best for their kids. Our community just isn't helping them get to the place where they can help their kids, right? So that's what, you know, I'm tired of hearing that excuse, quite frankly.
Can I say it a little bit different way? Is this something that clicks in my head? Maybe I'm wrong. It's the first time I've had the thought. It's like homelessness in this way, okay? Homelessness has a lot of facets to it. There's a lot of reasons why. There's I would call it a kind of an incoherent jumble of strategies we have to solve the problem. Basically what we don't want to do is just don't want to see them on the corner. That's for a lot of people. That's kind of where homelessness hits, but it's also largely an invisible problem that you don't realize because you're not in the camp. You know, you might see them on the corner and that's where it catches your attention, but you're not in the camp, in the woods, in the car, on the side of the street, in grandma's house where three generations are all living together. It's somewhat the same with this, where I think an awful lot of us come and go from our homes to our work. We commute across the road and we don't get into the neighborhoods where you can see, wow, we really have problems in this community. My wife and I go biking all the time and it's amazing. You know, you bike here and it's, you know, $500,000 homes. You go two streets over and you're like, oh my God, what kind of education are the kids getting who are living in this neighborhood? It breaks my heart to see. Adana, you're going to say?
No, I think you're totally on point with that. I think it's we don't recognize or understand exactly what's happening in those homes, and it's harder for us to find a good solution for them when we don't really understand.
Yeah, what you're talking about is apathy, right? It isn't that there are people who don't care. They just don't know. They go to their job at a hospital or a bank. Right. They drive from their home and their subdivision. They don't see these places. And so they just don't know these problems exist.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like they're intentionally saying, forget that part of the community. We've literally just forgotten. And so we have to wake people up to that and tell people, hey, right now we may be the most racially segregated this community's been in 50 years, if you look at heat maps. Right? Because gentrification and other developments and housing prices have pushed people that live in minoritized and impoverished communities further into those communities. And so people don't realize that because they don't go in those communities.
Right.
You know, but once you bring people this awareness, we've learned this through our Equity Project Alliance and some of the meetings that we've done. When people begin to understand, the Children's Service Council, we just said this is how bad our educational and child well-being outcomes are. And we were the only county in the country to vote for Donald Trump and a child services tax in the same election. Right?
Yeah.
Christian Science Monitor came here and said, how did that happen?
Right.
Well, because we just told people that we have left a whole lot of kids and families behind and they need help.
And I think, you know, for some, it's like you say, we're talking about, it's just, you know, lack of awareness.
Sure.
You know, and I understand too, you work hard at work and you do your best to be a good parent. And, you know, by the time it comes for the possibility of doing something else to help some other people, you're like, I'm out. I don't have enough left in. I trust me. Sure. I get that, you know, based on the hours I spend on this show, I get that. But, and I know you can't fix it all either, right? We got to understand you cannot fix everything. But at the same time, just saying that it can't be fixed and to chalk it up as, well, this is, listen, think about it this way. The amount, and this is the conservative argument, right?
Yeah.
How much money do we spend on policing and jails? And how much money could we avoid spending on policing and jails if we would do, and I, you know, this is where Lumen May is, I think, exactly right, is what if we simply spent more, you know, what if we spent less money earlier, more effectively, and helped, because we're not just preventing the crime, but we're saving these kids, helping them have effective, I mean, you think about like finding, you know, job applicants for like the ST project.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying. Mm-hmm. Good paying, we'll train you.
Isn't that what public school was supposed to be about?
Yes.
It was about educating our society so that we didn't have criminals.
Right. And, you know, making people,
when we stop educating them, we start having more criminals.
Making sure that people had the basic skills they needed to have, you know, livelihoods and the basic skills they needed in order to vote effectively. I wouldn't say we've done a great job at either of those a lot. Mm-hmm. In some cases, great.
Yeah.
You know, and some people go to, you know, good school. I guess this Warrington Middle School, the thing about it to me is it's not just Warrington, but when you think about them, if they wind up closing the school, half the school zone kids, 1,200, 600 have opted out. They're going somewhere else already. Mm-hmm. Okay. If they close that school, or if this charter school thing, they do it and it fails, those kids are going to have to go somewhere. And again, I'm going on memory here, but you have three other middle schools they would go to. One's already, like, I think they are a C, and you're not allowed to put them into a C because that mm-hmm. would fail them. And the other ones are, I think both are Bs. Everybody recognizes they would become Cs or Ds if that happens. Is our whole school system really that vulnerable, so weak at the middle school level that it's all like on the verge teetering all the time? That's the picture I get. That's not healthy.
Of course, I focus on the math and not on the other aspects of it.
Sure.
But one of the things that was said when I was watching the state board was one of the gentlemen had come into Warrington Middle and had walked to the school. And
oh, my God, this is such a heartbreaking story.
He walked through and he sat in an eighth grade math class and he noticed that the bookcase was full of all the books. And he was like, why are they not using their books? The algebra books. And the teacher was teaching basic arithmetic. And I know on one hand, that's terrible. I mean, why are our eighth graders not knowing basic arithmetic? And on the other hand, the other part of me, because it's what we do at Mathnasium, go back to those basics. Mm. Because if they can't multiply and they can't divide and they don't know how to work order of operations, we need to have that before we expect them to do well on an algebra class. So there was a part of me that was kind of heartened by the fact that the teacher was actually doing what was right for the kids.
Right.
And the other part of me is, how did we get to eighth grade and we were still having this struggle?
Yeah, the problem that they can't do algebra yet or aren't prepared to be able to do algebra yet. And yet, as you said, the right solution is not, well, just force them through it. The right solution is go back and find the point of weakness in their basic education that they need. Let's take a quick break from the wrap. We've got Rusty Branch and Adana Elder here in the studio with. I know we kind of focused on math today because that's your thing and schools because it's both your things. But I'm on Facebook and I see these little math quizzes, you know, 90% of people get this wrong. And it's some, like, to me, third grade problem. And I watch people arguing about the answer and I think, good Lord.
Andrew, you know there are only three kind of people in the world, right?
I'm curious to find it out.
Those who can count and those who can't.
Right. Nicely done. Jen is dying. I love it. Oh, man. And, you know, when somebody just texted me in, another concern here is, and we hear it, it's kind of like it's at the periphery of this conversation, but we know that NES Pensacola is, what, 43% of our economy? We know that we're just starting to maybe get close to getting museum access back and maybe Blue Angels practices back access to that. Woo-hoo. And the lighthouse, and we're so excited about that. But as Mike Kohler and Doug Underhill before him and other people have been so eager to remind us, NES Pensacola is not guaranteed to stay here. Those missions, the work they do, the money they spend, the Blue Angels, all of that can be done elsewhere. And the military is not happy with the state of education in Escambia County. And though we are seeing small steps like the Pensacola State College, you know, prep school or whatever, if we don't get education better in Escambia County, it is a very real possibility that NES Pensacola evaporates. Mm. And then what happens to this county? And I like care about education, if not for just the kids, for the future of our economy. Right, Rusty?
100%. I think it's much realer than we want to admit. We think it's just going to stay, and that's all somebody...
We have an entitlement mindset about the Blue Angels and the NES Pensacola, for sure.
I think that's much more in peril than we would want to admit.
Yeah, and that's why it's always kind of a, you know, how much do you push on the Navy to change something to give us what we want? Well, NES Pensacola is not guaranteed to stay. Last thought, Adana?
I think that we all need to be particularly cognizant of what we're doing for our kids as they grow and learn, and as a community, we need to do better for them.
And we can, and I hope we will. And so there are resources out there. I mean, be aware, be willing, I guess, is the first step. Rusty Branch and Dana Elder, thanks so much for the conversation. Folks, have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Have fun on Pep Talk, Jenna.
Stream us at newsradio923.com. News Radio 92.3. WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.